Welcome to Global Talk, a podcast from the National's Foreign Desk. With us today is Dr. Leah Farrell. Leah is a former counterterrorism analyst turned academic and co-author of the book, The Arabs at War in Afghanistan, which she wrote with Mustafa Hamid, a senior Mujahideen figure who became a close friend of bin Laden. The book is structured in a series of interviews, with Mustafa giving a behind-the-scenes perspective on the role of the Arab fighters during the war against Soviet forces in Afghanistan and how Al-Qaeda got its start. So Leah, it would seem to most people, I think, that you and Mustafa Hamid were coming from completely different, if not completely opposing worlds. So how were you able to gain his trust and encourage him to not only speak to you about his life, but also collaborate on a book?
Well, we started on the book almost 2 years after we'd first started talking. So we'd had a long time to talk to one another and get to know each other's viewpoints. And also, I think one of the things that helped us reach that point was that at that stage, we both had fairly active blogs. So I could see, for example, what he was saying to me in a message versus what he was saying on his blog, and he could see the same for me. So we were able to discern whether or not we were obviously both being truthful and upfront in what we were saying and not saying one thing to essentially ingratiate ourselves and another to people that read our blog. So that was really important in the process. But as with anything, it was just a time thing, really. We kept talking and kept talking and kept arguing and kept arguing.
And the book references the Jalalabad School of Fighters. I was wondering if you could explain for our listeners what this is and its significance.
We talked about schools of jihad and the Jalalabad School in particular, referencing worldviews and what was essentially supported or legitimized as activity. And the Jalalabad School came about as a result of the Jalalabad battle, obviously. But it was when the older generation of figures like bin Laden and Abdullah Azam decided to pull back from Jalalabad, and the younger volunteers and fighters wanted to keep fighting, and they wanted to go and die at the fronts, even if there wasn't strategic benefit in doing so. And so they essentially ignored these older leaders and went off and did their own thing and started their own little groups, managed to get funding from the Gulf. And as what we're seeing in Syria, they became more radical because there weren't the older figures there to pull them in. They were essentially pushing them away. And so you saw the precursor, if you will, to a lot of what we've seen in, say, for example, in Algeria or more recently in Syria and Iraq, with extreme violence that wasn't moderated in any form and was certainly less strategic, if you will.
And do Mustafa's insights tell us anything else about the current generation of militants fighting in Syria and Iraq and other countries?
Yes, I think they're really quite important. And he cites another colleague of his and some discussions the older generation of foreign volunteers had about the corruption of armed jihad, where it becomes essentially only about fighting, killing or dying. And the older generation of figures, very much some of them, had what you might call a very political agenda, in the sense that there were purposes for what they were doing it. It wasn't ideologically driven in this mindset of just going and dying. Mustafa himself says, "I went to win."
And do you think it's important to look back and try and gain a better understanding of what happened in Afghanistan after 1979 and the rise of Al-Qaeda, the Taliban and other groups, and whether that can and teach us more and try and understand better about militancy today?
I absolutely think it's important to look back and better understand that history. I mean, Afghanistan is not Syria. Afghanistan is not Iraq. But it does show a historical evolution of militancy. And it does, when you look into the history, it does reveal that a lot of what is manifesting now had its origins either in Afghanistan or from the people that were there and subsequently left. And more specifically, for example, what looking at the Afghan conflict and the resistance groups there shows us is sometimes when you try and centralize groups, who are undertaking a resistance effort and outside financial support comes in, and quite often those people, be that governments or financiers, that are trying to coordinate the outside financial support, they want that central point, and they want those groups unified. But throwing more resources and trying to force a unified grouping inevitably leads to splinters and competition for resources. And I think had those lessons been appreciated better, you know, more recently with Syria and the initial efforts to support the resistance there, we may not have had some of the issues that we've seen manifested there as well.
And with the rise of ISIL, I was interested in hearing your thoughts on what the continuing relevance of al-Qaeda is now.
Well, it's one of those really interesting dynamics, obviously, because ISIL being the splinter of al-Qaeda. But I think what it shows too is the importance of an armed front for jihad to attract foreign fighters. One of al-Qaeda's greatest weaknesses that Mustafa and I talk about in the book is that it didn't have its own front for jihad that could attract foreign volunteers. It was essentially trying to recruit people by saying, come and join us with the Taliban. And so what ISIL has that's made it essentially so popular is that place where people are attracted, because boots on the ground and going to fight is fundamentally what's motivating a lot of these young men in particular. So I think from that respect, the difference between al-Qaeda and ISIL is quite clear. And so long as that's the way it is, I think al-Qaeda is going to continue to struggle, even though it's not its key focus to get territory. Its key focus is obviously to attack the West still. What is really interesting to me is the intersection of generations of jihadis. Now, the first, second, third, fourth, I think we're up to about the fifth generation. And so looking at how we've now got a generation that is quite separate to al-Qaeda in one respect with ISIL, but on the al-Qaeda side, what's happened is that you've seen an intermixing of the generations, and what you've also seen is older generations that may have been in competition with al-Qaeda and part of other groups or who stood apart from al-Qaeda are now coming back into the fold to try and counterbalance ISIL, because they see it as being away from the path and not having the right program or manhaj. So it will be very interesting, in a very horrible sense of the word, interesting to see how that plays out, and whether or not ISIL can prevail and hold territory, or if it does get pushed back, and whether, when it gets pushed back, it turns to being a more terrorism-driven organisation in terms of attacking the West, or it continues its focus of on-the-ground insurgency.
And do you think there's any risk of seeing al-Qaeda and branches like Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria as the kind of more cuddly groups or the safer option when comparing them with what ISIL is doing?
I think there is a risk with that, because it's quite clear that al-Qaeda is not moderate. And I don't think that it is ever going to be a group that will come to the table. But I mean, there's scales of awfulness, if you will, and ISIL obviously tops the ranks. But yeah, I do have a problem with Jabhat al-Nusra being portrayed as a kind of cuddlier jihadi group, because it's one of those things we simply don't know if they were that big and if they got that unwieldy. Because one of the things that has interested me is I think a lot of that initial violence actually took place outside of the control of ISIL's senior leadership. And then it becomes a question of whether they allow it to continue and promote it because it's the only way to maintain control, or whether they stand aside from it and let it happen. And Mustafa and I talk about that a lot in our book too, because the same dynamics happened in the Jalalabad school and the same dynamics happened in al-Qaeda, but on a much limited scale.
And lastly, what would you say is the biggest challenge for those trying to understand and analyse global militancy now?
I think the biggest challenge, apart from access to information, is to appreciate that what you see on the surface is only one small part of the dynamics. And I think technology and the use of technology by militant groups can fundamentally cloud what's going on. And the example I would use is obviously ISIL uses Twitter and a lot of these things and releases propaganda videos to portray a particular image. And we run the risk of basing our assessments on that superficial layer at the top without looking at what's going on the ground. Who are the leaders behind it? Because the people that run the show, whether it's in ISIL or whether it's in Al-Qaeda, don't have that type of presence. And that was a mistake that was made with Al-Qaeda, looking at the people that were talking in its videos versus who was actually running things. And it's a mistake we're repeating and that's being amplified now by Twitter and by these other means of pushing out propaganda.
To read The National's review of Leah's book, visit thenational.ae. And you can follow The National's Foreign Desk on Twitter at The National Rome. That's ROAM.